Thank you and welcome everyone. Oh wow, this is getting exciting. This is our fourth class of 2007 and just want to again welcome all of you to the Women in Business teleclass brought to you each month on behalf of the Principal Financial Group. You know, this is an award-winning and complimentary teleclass created by Principal, a company committed to helping growing businesses and individuals like you, of course, achieve financial security and success. This is what it's all about. Today, like always, we'll be providing practical but yet very profound advice and tips that you can enact on immediately and, of course, straight from the mouths of the most successful business owners out there and leading experts like today's guest, who has a proven track record for sales success and growing a business. Now, just a couple things before we begin. Please don't worry about scrambling for paper and pen. You know, you could sit back and then relax and enjoy, because most of all the information about this class you can receive at principal.com/teleclass. So again, if you go there, you can get the notes from today. Just have to click on this class schedule, and then you can get more information. But of course, if I'm sure that our guest will be sharing a couple other little trinkets here and there, so you know, feel free to ask questions and to take notes on all those little extra goodies. The other thing too is remember that the last 15 minutes of the class, we'll be having a live Q&A. So whenever you're ready, you can queue in by simply pressing *0 and you'll queue in for questions. While you are queued in, you'll be able to listen to the class. So whenever you're ready, you can go ahead and do that. Otherwise, prepare your questions and join us at about 15 for those. Now, today I'm so excited to introduce you to Katrina Markoff. She's a recognized entrepreneur and chocolate visionary. Could you imagine a dream job if you've ever had one? Katrina is the owner and creator of Vos au Chocolat, who turned a boutique specialty chocolate shop into a multi-million dollar international enterprise. She began her career in the gourmet food industry after graduating from Le Cordon Bleu in Paris. I feel so French today, Katrina. And then in 98, Katrina opened her first retail shop in Chicago with a loan backed by the SBA, which she'll tell you a little bit about how she got started. And she ended up selling it to stores like Neiman Marcus. But I'm not going to give away too much because I want her to tell you all of that. I think what we want to know here is that she's a terrific business owner. And like you, she's here today to share with us how to jumpstart your dream into a real-life multi-million dollar global business. And Katrina, I believe you said revenues up to what, about $15 million projected?
For this year. Mm-hmm.
For this year, which is phenomenal. And you've been in business how long? Since 98?
Yeah, 98.
Right.
Almost.
So she's quite a role model for us. By the end of this session, you'll be armed with the tools and to hear, you know, what you need to do to go ahead and build your business. So we're counting on you, Katrina. The other thing, Katrina, I want to please share your website.
Sure. It's www.vosgechocolate.com. So it's V as in Victor, O, S as in Sam, G as in Golf, E, S as in Sam, and then the word chocolate, chocolate.com.
Well, Katrina, we can't thank you enough for being a part of this, and I'm so excited to hear all about your successes that I'm going to just jump right in. I'm going to add my first question, Katrina, is what were the first few steps you took to make your dream a reality? How did it all get started? I want to hear from the beginning.
I think it started with a realization that if I were going to have to go into the working world, I wanted it to be something that I was passionate about. So my second semester of my senior year at Vanderbilt, I was studying chemistry and psychology, and I was facing graduation and wondering what in the heck am I going to do with my life. And I realized my real passion was cooking and horses, and I figured cooking would probably make a better career move. So I applied to the Cordon Bleu in Paris because if I wanted to get a true culinary experience, I felt like France was the right place to go. And it was really on the experience of cooking as opposed to, like, the business of cooking and all the sanitation and all that kind of stuff, because I really want to learn how to cook. So I was accepted to the Cordon Bleu, and then 3 days after graduating, I moved there. And then I was there for about a year and a half, and I was studying cuisine and pastry. Still not exactly sure what I was going to do, maybe be a pastry chef? I wasn't sure. And I got tired of working with the French provincialism at the time in the culinary world. They didn't really want you to get too crazy and mix different spices or silver leaves or whatnot. And I'd met an Indian chef when I was there who did a guest chef appearance at the Cordon Bleu. And he taught us that in every dessert in India, they put silver leaf on it. And I said, well, why would you do that? And he said, it's an aid in digestion. And that was sort of the first little nugget of fascination I had and wanderlust that developed to learn about other cultures' cuisines. So after graduating from school, then I moved to Spain to work with a very avant-garde chef there called Ferran Adrià, who said, you know, don't worry about working at all these fancy Michelin three-star restaurants. He said, really open your mind and your imagination and your palate to the flavors of the world and just go travel and taste. So that's what I did. So the next 9 months, I traveled around the world studying food, mostly Southeast Asia and Australia. And then I came back to the United States, and my mom asked me the question, okay, so what are you going to do with your life after all this? I said, I don't
like
really
any good
know
mom.
Yet. And that's when my uncle, who was in Dallas, called me and said, why don't you come help me? I'm starting a mail order business while you're figuring things out. And that's really where the light bulb went off, was when, in Dallas. And he taught me a lot about how you bring a product into the marketplace. He had me doing photo styling. He had me doing copywriting, taking orders, you know, just doing accounting stuff, running to the bank, the whole thing. So it was there that, you know, I was like, I got to get into the food world. How am I going to do it? I don't want to work in a restaurant. I would be a terrible chef. It just wasn't the lifestyle I wanted. And I went home, and I had this necklace on from the Nagaland tribes that I'd bought on my travels. And I wanted to tell a story about these people. So I went in my kitchen, and I don't know how this all happens, but it just does. And I made a curry and coconut with milk chocolate truffle, and I named it Naga. And that was the epiphany, to tell a story of a culture from which these interesting ingredients come through the medium of chocolate. Because in the United States, there was this incredible foodie culture developing. You know, all the food magazines were coming up and revising, and you had amazing chefs doing really incredible things. People were interested in world flavors. It wasn't just about France anymore. They were interested in Thai cuisine, Chinese, Japanese, Australian, Aboriginal. You know, all these things were coming on board. And so I decided that chocolate would be my medium to explore the flavors of the world. And I then, in that moment, created 22 flavors. Because when you're in the zone, that's when you can really create. And so that was sort of the genesis of the company. And then I decided I wanted to do the business in Chicago because it was an up-and-coming, you know, strong food city. I didn't want to go to New York. I kind of always liked the underdog city, and Chicago's kind of bat to New York. And so I moved to Chicago, and I got an apartment that was big enough to have, you know, chocolate making in the kitchen, and the den was the UPS computer, and my guest bedroom was where I stored the finished product, and I had corrugated boxes in the living room. And I started out of my house because
terrific.
That's the only thing I could do.
Well, you know what? It seems like, you know, the beginnings of what most of us have gone through, and that you found your aha moment, which is what I relate that to, is you found your value proposition at that point because you seem to have found something that was very unique and very different. So it is a unique business concept. Did you, you know, plan, you know, for this? Did you have a business plan, an outside advisor? Because what we want to know today is how did you structure it? Because you went, you know, in a short amount of time, you've gone up to a $15 million business. So in less than 10 years, which is phenomenal. And from what I recall, you said most of your growth spurt has been in the last couple of years, right?
Yes. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. So you kind of have that hockey stick effect where, you know, if you look at a graph, you see yourself go up like that, which is fabulous. But usually there's a lot of challenges to controlling growth at that level. So did you have a business plan? Outside, how did you manage all this?
I did have a bit of a business plan. I had a mission statement. I knew who our customer was. I knew that we would be selling to Neiman Marcus. I knew that we had I compared the business to really a fashion company in a lot of ways. I said, we have a couture line, and that is only to be at the best department stores to reinforce the luxury nature of our brand. So the truffles, which were those at the time, were only to be at like Neiman Marcus and Bergdorf Goodman and very high-end specialty food stores. And then eventually I knew that I would create my perfume line, if you will, which could go into a lot of different avenues without diluting the brand and still, you know, reinforcing the brand essence, but it's at a lower price point and it's a lot more shelf stable. So that were the candy bars, the exotic candy bars that we did. So that's everywhere from Whole Foods to, you know, little specialty food stores to Neiman Marcus as well. You know, it covers the entire gamut. It's an affordable luxury that I'm creating, and the bars are really for individual personal consumption, and the truffles are really for the gift business. So that's, you know, that's where I did. But, you know, you're constantly evolving, constantly changing. So you may write a business plan, and it should be, you know, broad strokes, and it should be, you know, 3 years out, and you know, that's sort of like your guiding principles in making decisions. And it's sort of like, you know, I've been reading that book, The Secret, about like, you know, what you believe to be true, it draws to you. And I tell you, it was just like that. I knew Neiman Marcus was going to be a customer. And in the first 6 months, they were. And then they added another store and another store and another store. And it's just all about, I think, the power of, like, intention and putting that energy into your product. And it shapes all the decisions that you make based on those sort of guiding principles. And they're still with me today, I think, in a lot of ways. You know, you change operationally a great deal, but hopefully your core value system is pretty much the same.
Right, and successful corporations, you know, that are very much older, basically, if you look at them, they have never changed their values. Their core values remain the same 100 years later. So I think that that's a real key to look at. But, you know, I'm going to ask you a question. It wasn't part of our agenda, but I'll ask it quickly because I'm interested. How did you get into Neiman Marcus? Did you set up appointments at a corporate level?
We have a Neiman Marcus in Chicago, and, you know, at the time, I had a very not so attractive stock silver metal box that I got from, you know, I could buy 100 of them and I didn't have to do a custom. I had a little Bosch sticker, and then I had this organza purple ribbon, and, you know, it's far from what the packaging is today. But you got to start somewhere. So I just walked in there. I somehow knew someone who knew the buyer, the Epicure buyer at Neiman Marcus at that store level. So they said, oh, meet this girl. She's got some interesting things going on. Fine. So I had the meeting, you know, go up to Neiman Marcus, present to him, and he's just looking at me like, well, now what is this? You know, I was telling him, oh, it has curry and it has wasabi and it has paprika. And at that time, no one was doing this. This was completely radical and renegade. And so left the meeting and I was like, I don't know if that went that well. But the next day he called me and he said, you know what? I haven't tried a single one of those truffles, but I need another box. And I said, well, why do you need another box? Because my staff ate them all and they're raving, so I guess I better try them. So he had probably just put them out and then they were like, no, this is great. So he said, okay, if you will sample your product, I will sell. I will buy 12 of them or something. I was like, okay. So I went in, sampled them, sold them. He liked me. All right, let's do another one. Okay, let's do another thing. And then the national buyer came into town, and Kelly helped me get a meeting with him. And I said, I'm going down to Dallas because we're doing an event there. You know, if I sample, would you bring in the product? He did. It sold. He liked it. And it just went from there to L.A., to San Francisco, to Honolulu, to Atlanta. And
had your first break locally, which is really fabulous to think about that. Because
true,
you can't, you don't have to start at the national level. Many people think they have to go knocking at a national buyer's door. But what you did worked real well, which is you went into, you know, a local store, got to know the people who were some of the decision makers, or asked friends who knew friends, you know, that whole separation thing.
Right.
If you look enough, you'll find somebody who knows that person. Mm-hmm. And then you were able to do it. But what got it was that the product was good. At the end of the day, it was the staff that sold that buyer into it.
Yep.
But I have to tell you, we did a one with Mrs. Field once, and she did the same thing. She was out in the corner, you know, her first store, sampling, doing tons of sampling. That seemed to really work for that food product.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's sampling is key. You have to do it. And then if you're lucky enough to do something pretty radical, like what I was doing, you will get a lot of press coverage. And the media is extremely helpful in driving interest to your brand from other retailers that want to buy you, whether it be Dean and DeLuca or Whole Foods or whomever, and also like driving business to your website. So we constantly consider that in every new product launch. We want to have it out, you know, we want to have it at least concepted 6 months out so we can send it to the press, because any type of coverage you can get in that way really equates to sales and brand building. And I absolutely want to build a brand. We were talking earlier, it's a brand with a lot of soul, which we'll probably get into later. But that is core. I'm not doing business just to make money. This is like a living, breathing thing that's bigger than, you know, green dollar bills.
Now, you know, you shared with me on our pre-call about a woman in Chicago who was instrumental. And there are a lot of people on the phone that I am sure has gone through what I've gone through with so many, and when it comes to raising funds or finding an equity investor or a bank to lend from or an SBA. But you had a unique situation. And I'd love to share, please share us, you know, share the story about how you got your first start when it came to some funding.
Yeah, right. Well, I remember when we first started out, I had a partner, and we had each put in about $15,000 because we had saved some money over time, which wasn't much. It was much. We'd buy this and then buy that and whatnot. And then once we got our business going, the bank said, okay, well, if you collateralize, you know, fully, $30,000, we'll give you a $30,000 loan. So, okay, we did that. My friend had some stock, so we were able to do that. And then we got to the point where we wanted to build out a store in Michigan Avenue downtown. And this was a lot of money for us. It was going to be $80,000. You know, we didn't have that. So we met a woman who worked at First Chicago, and she said, well, you know, you don't have enough history really with your business, so we'll have to do an SBA. You'll have to collateralize 25%, and the government will do the other 75%, but you're going to need to come up with a collateral for 25%. Well, luckily, the partner I had at the time had a lot of stock, so she put down the stock as a security, and we were able to get an SBA for the beginning. And I remember at this time, we had a guy that came in from New York and said, you know, I'd like to be partners in your business. I'll give you, I don't even know what it was, $40,000 or something, and then I want 33% of your business. And I was like, no way. But, you know, a lot of people, it's hard to get money, so, you know, you'll take investors, mini investors at times. And I just didn't really want to go that route. So we said no, but it was, of course, tempting because it was the first offer, you know. So we get this SBA, and then, you know, big banks that I only knew big banks, you know, and then First Chicago was bought by Bank One, and Bank One bought Chase. And I established this relationship with this amazing woman who really, really believed in my business. And she would basically campaign me to her banks. And I was always in the annual review. I was in the annual review for Bank One, for Chase, for Amcor, for every bank she went to. But after Bank One happened, after First Chicago was bought by Bank One, she said, you know what, it's too big of a bank. I'm going to go to a smaller bank. They're more creative, as she would say, or aggressive to give, you know, maybe people that weren't fully collateralized loans. So she moved to a smaller bank that was more aggressive, and they started giving us a lot of money to do the growth I wanted to do. I built a store in Las Vegas for $500,000. I bought equipment for $400,000. I got a $1 million line of credit with her. And I was always collateral short. We didn't own anything. The only thing I have is inventory and finally good cash flow. But I didn't even have that until a few years ago. But this woman, I mean, the relationship with her was so, so important. And she always was level with me. She always sort of told me where she was at her max, and then it just seemed she would switch to another bank where she could be more aggressive. And now with the banking industry, you know, so much consolidation, a lot of people are starting small banks, building them up to be sold to large banks. So you've got this little window between 2 to 4 years where a lot of smaller banks are a little more aggressive. And if you believe in your business, which I'm sure you do if you're doing it, and you know, you'll be able to get these loans. And it's also about meeting the right person and having a connection with them, but she is a dynamite woman. I mean, I wouldn't be where I was. I would have definitely needed to take on investors at this point, and I haven't. So it's pretty.
So lesson here, Katrina, would be definitely seek out, and you know what, you have options. You don't have to have one bank, right? So
and
you have
don't
options.
Don't go to the big banks because they're secure. Because yeah. I don't know. I don't play that game.
Actually, it's very interesting because yesterday I spoke at the National Bankers Association in New Orleans, and I met with probably about 200 small community bank owners. And I have to tell you, I asked those questions because I knew we were going to have the teleclass today, and I got that response. They're willing to take more risk. They're willing, if they get to know you, build a relationship with you,
yeah.
and trust that you have a good, sound, you know, business acumen, they will absolutely go above and beyond what some of the larger banks would, which I found was very interesting. So that could be a very new way for some of our women business owners to look at funding options.
Mm-hmm. And remember, we were talking before, too. I know National City does a lot of lending to women because they've done research that women don't typically take out loans, but women, if they do, are the most conscientious of paying them back. They wouldn't just file Chapter 11 just to get out of this. So the banks really like to lend to women. But women don't tend to take money because they like to pay everything with cash, which is such an interesting – I didn't realize that. So there's definitely a market. There's definitely an audience to listen to that wants to lend money to women.
Well, that's terrific. I thought that was a very important point. Thank you for sharing that. Now, you mentioned that your company, your brand, is built around a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So Voja Chocolat is a lifestyle. I want to understand that a little bit more because I've been reading a lot about the new branding, you know, strategy, what's working, what's not to build a brand. And they say that it's very community and lifestyle focused. If you can create a brand that has that essence, that's a real plus. So what are some of the secrets for our listeners that really build the soul of a business through that brand strategy?
Right. Well, for me, you know, it's so much about being like having a lot of integrity in everything that I produce. You know, everything has a story. Every product I make is not because I want to be wild and crazy and put wasabi in it. It's because I want to tell the story about a culture or an architect or a musician or a culture or a religion or, you know, whatever it may be. Like, I fall in love pretty much every single day with something. You know, you come across so many amazing ideas and people and sounds in the world, and I just love to channel that through the medium of chocolate. And I think by opening people's minds up to new ideas with flavors, you may be able to open up new ideas of cultures or what you think about people, which is a really big concept. But I find that it's true because it's really just stories are just interesting. And when you present it in that way, it doesn't become political or stereotypical. And this is sort of like just an undertone latent thing that I've just sort of happened upon in this brand. It sort of just evolved into having that as one of the dimensions. So, you know, that's an aspect of it, which started by just saying, okay, everything we make is an experience. And if this brand were a person, what would they like to wear? What would they like to watch? What charities do they give to? You know, I think of it in that way, and then I just build products around it, like yoga and chocolate boxes, and I do yoga and chocolate workshops just to kind of teach the idea of, like, when you're present, and usually after yoga class you're quite present because you stop the chattering mind, any experience can be so amplified. And chocolate is just a really great lesson in that, because who doesn't love chocolate and yoga? And so I just try to blend different interests into the brand, which, like we said, it really gives it a soul because it has sort of like this sort of human trait to it.
It's very interesting because the new term out there is called activation marketing, and it says basically in a nutshell, it means conveying the same sentiment through marketing, everything from marketing through the sales experience, and it seems like that's what you've done with your brand.
I don't know what's going on in the world of trends, but yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, the brand has a heart, and I just always, someone gave me a book when I was, like, I think I was about 16, I was at a horse show, and they said, I was like, I don't know what I want to do with my life, I got to do something passionate, and they gave me a book, and it says, where the heart leads you, money will follow. And I've never forgotten that, and I've always sort of believed, you know what, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing, and it may not, you know, maybe it may not sense like while I was traveling around, you know, Thailand and Vietnam and Australia and, you know, working myself from place to place, wondering what the heck is going to be at the end of this, you know, you of course question. But if you just keep believing, like, just keep having these experiences, because someday they sort of all culminate to be the person that you are, or to put you on the path that you need to be on, or whatever it may be, and I just have to trust in that.
Well, Katrina, that's fabulous. Now, I'm interested in understanding the evolution, how it works. So you started out of your apartment in 98, and then by 98, the end of 98, you had your first retail store in Chicago?
Right. In November 1998, we had a teeny little 300-square-foot store in Bucktown, just a little neighborhood of Chicago. And then in 1999, well, I think it was 1 year later, we did our, November as well, a store on Michigan Avenue on the second floor of a new mall that was opening. And it was, you know, big expenditure. The rent was, we were paying $1,000 at Bucktown, and it was $5,000 here, so it was a huge jump, right? And the mall, you know, it wasn't very busy the first year because no one knew about it, so, you know, we went through that. And then I ended up buying my partner out in 2002. And then that year I decided to open up my New York store, which is where things really started to kind of change, I think, for us, which was in, I think, 2003 we ended up opening that one. And that was a very big move because my accountant, I didn't even tell her I did it because I knew she would say don't do it, but I knew it was the right decision to make. And I did it on a shoestring budget because I could only get so much money to build it out. And that's when things really changed from a branding level, because going to New York City, where the media is based pretty much, they tend to cover their backyard, and it's such an international presence from a branding schematic globally that we started really getting a lot of press coverage, a lot of international coverage, a lot of coverage in Japan and Germany, and it started to build the brand. And then after New York, I did a store in Las Vegas in, I think it was 04, and then in 05, did another store in Chicago, and then didn't do any stores last year, and then now working on another store in New York, and which will open in July in 83rd in Madison, and then working on another one in L.A.
How are you managing, Katrina? I mean, I think our listeners are going to be very interested to understand what kind of operations did you have to put in place? Because many people on the phone now probably have one location somewhere or possibly more. But I think regardless, we want to understand what you had to put in place to manage suddenly a multi-venue, you know, all these locations.
Right, absolutely. Well, it's all about your team, and it's knowing when to hire and who to hire, and that's always been my weakest link. I'm not that great at it. You just kind of figure it out as you go. There's no, you know, big equation on how and when. But I would say in the last 2 years, going from, you know, like a $4.5 million company to a $9 million company last year, was a big transition for us operationally, because we needed a fulfillment area, because we're almost completely vertical. I mean, we have manufacturing, we do mail order, we have a marketing department, all the branding's done in-house, and we have retail and business-to-business, wholesale. So it's just like finding the right people at the right times, and I still don't have that figured out. But I feel like it's starting to click together, because once you reach a certain sort of critical mass, then things start kind of falling in place, because it's always hard when, you know, I'm very seasonal, so I don't need the help all year round. I really need them in fourth quarter and Valentine's Day. And so it's just, you know, being creative, working with temp agencies, trying to find a good one that you can get good people, trying to really hire good managers that can make decisions, that are innovators, that are always thinking outside the box. The last thing you want is someone to ask you how to do everything, because God knows you don't know all the answers. And you don't want to. You want them smarter than you in their areas. And you know, what's great about Vogue is, like, people think it's a really cool company and really want to work for it. So we get a lot of people that are like, look, I just want to work for a place that I love going to every day. I mean, come on, you eat chocolate all day long and, you know, trying to bring peace to the world through chocolate. So,
now, let me know when there's an availability.
So Katrina, I don't know.
Did you hire an HR person? I mean, obviously had
our
to
accounting department did that. Basically, Nancy had an HR experience. A lot of times accounting and HR crossover. So so Nancy turned out to be really good at hiring, and also did the bookkeeping. So that's still where we are today, but we don't have an HR firm or headhunter system. I find that, I don't know if those things always work out so well. It's so hard to.
So you do local. You do local marketing to find people.
Craigslist is huge for us. You know, and then it's just like word of mouth. Just, you know, networking with your business community. People always know people. Just keep talking. Just keep out there, and you will learn so much. That's how I learned a lot, is just being out there and having mentors and finding mentors who wanted to be my mentor because the company was cool and I'd give them free chocolate and they'd work for free. And I had a lot of angels, you know, this whole process.
That's right. That's fabulous. So now how many employees do you have?
Now we have 100-ish. I don't really know because a lot of it's, you know, seasonal and then part-time. With the stores. And
yeah.
So.
Well, it sounds like, you know, you've been able to manage a lot of your growth, even though it was a very fast growth spurt. You were able to manage it because you have a pretty solid infrastructure of, you know, a core team that seems to be working pretty, efficiently for you.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, let me understand, you're looking at, you mentioned a couple things about product lines, you know, the Voga with the chocolate and all this stuff. So it's not solely about chocolate. So are you doing a brand extension? Are you doing brand lines?
You know, it's just part of the brand. I've been launching lifestyle things pretty much since we started, you know, because I always saw, like, Voga as this person, and a lot of times it's a female person. I guess probably because I'm creating it, so I just kind of think in those terms. But these lifestyle items come in and they come out. The first one was a purse that we did with a local designer, and she had a little space in the purse for, like, one of our little soapy bars to fit in. So there was always that chocolate bar for those moments of need, as I would say. And then that evolved into working with a designer out of L.A. who made these incredible leather jackets and, you know, sold them to, you know, the celebrity world in Japan and whatnot, and just kind of an undercurrent thing. And those were just beautiful, needed only in dark purple. And it was just sort of to represent the spirit of the brand. And that's how I originally got into them. And then it, you know, sort of just kept evolving. And then I did a line of candles that were just around for a short period of time that were like, what does Naga feel like and smell like, you know, or what does Bianca, depending on which flavor I would pick. And then it started getting a little more serious. And then it got into, like, okay, I want to contribute to bettering the world and do some charity stuff for women. And I found V-Day, and I was like, I don't have time personally to volunteer as I did when I was in college, but how can I roll it into my business? So then I just started picking different charities and giving percentage of proceeds or profits or whatever it was to that charity, and it just felt good, you know, like it just felt really great. And so then there was that kind of partnership, and then yoga was something that just kind of healed me for where I was in my life, and I saw the lessons in that. And so then I, you know, one of my best friends is a yoga instructor, and David Romanelli, yeah, Dave Yoga, and then we started collaborating, and then we did this incredible partnership of yoga and chocolate boxes and workshops that we go all over the country and do. He does about 3 every month. And now we're talking to Paul Smith about doing something in this, you know, more fashion world. And so it just, and we did something with Bobbi Brown Cosmetics. I mean, it's fun and creative and interesting and super stimulating to me. And I don't know.
So who's exploring all these partnerships? Is that something that you do personally, or do you have people that work on strategic alliances?
You know, a lot of times their PR department contacts ours, and my sister does all our PR and marketing stuff in New York, and she's director of retail stores. So we just hired a director of retail to take over that spot. But, like, that's what you do. You have people do a lot of different things. You know, it's not like they do one thing. They do, like, 5 things. That's just how it is as a small company. So they'll either call her, or we may pitch an idea to them. But in all these cases that I just mentioned, they kind of call us. Basically, like, pretty much, like, the bigger ones, like Bobbi Brown was doing a chocolate-themed sort of summer makeup collection last year, and she was like, I want to do something chocolate, and Vogue is just around the corner from their office, like, let's do Vogue, seems like the right fit, right vibe, and so that's kind of how that happened. It happens different ways, but a lot of times they call us.
Well, do you do so? Do you actually, you have somebody designated to do PR for you then? So that your sister is mm-hmm. she does that round the clock. And do you do things like samplings at events and stuff where you can constantly get the name? And do you?
We used to do that. I mean, we used to do that a lot more locally. And you know, whenever we go into a new market, we always do a lot of local sampling. And then you know, it's like kind of enough is enough because people ask us to sample all the time because our product is so easy to sample and donate to charities and all that kind of stuff. So now we're more strategic about, you know, okay, which samplings do we want to promote from a wholesale level, and which ones do we want to do from just a marketing level? What's the right things to do, and then what are the things that are good for the business and things like that? So it just depends, because, you know, we have this wholesale business. So obviously we have a, you know, a budget set aside to do samplings for Whole Foods and for Neiman Marcus and Bergdorf's, et cetera. And then we have a marketing sampling budget where, you know, if we want to go do, you know, we're doing this event in 2 weeks in California called Taste 3, and it's like sort of all the leading foodies go there, and then we're going to do like a tasting sensory experience table that's at every break going on. So you just decide like what is the most bang for your buck, because obviously we all have limited funds, I think.
Sure. Oh, you know what? I just want to remind everyone that in 5 minutes we're going to be opening the phone lines for questions, for Q&A. So as we continue to speak to Katrina, please do think about the questions that you'd like to ask her. And if you want to get in queue early, please just hit *0 and you'll go into queue and be able to continue to listen to the teleclass. So, Katrina, I want to know about your website a little bit. I went on, and obviously you do a lot of e-commerce. Mm-hmm. Is that a very fast-growing part of your business, or do you do most of your business still via the actual retail locations?
The largest growth areas are wholesale, so our business-to-business, you know, model, and internet. Yeah, internet and corporate. Our direct business, which I say is like all the phone orders, the internet, and the corporate business, is growing by like 40%, which is really great. The web, our website isn't that great. Like, it could be a lot better. So we're, you know, we've never invested in it. Like, most people don't. You know, you invest in building out stores for a couple $100,000, but a lot of people don't invest when they're like multi-channel like we are, don't invest as much in the website. But this year I said, you know what, we have to, we must, in order to see the return, because it's the largest component of our direct business. Is, you know, we did, I think we did only like 1.6 million or 1.9 million on our website. And based on our ranking, they said your ranking in Google, they said, is like a $20 million internet business. And I'm like, oh, we are far from that. They said, if we're working with this group in Chicago, like, if you can restructure the way people explore your website and the ease of ordering from it and adding names to your address book to, you know, drive corporate business, he said, we could absolutely guarantee you're going to double your business this year. So we're doing this new website with them. It's going to, back end's going to stay pretty similar. They're going to just do really beautiful tweaks and different mapping to increase that, because I think there's a lot of opportunity to have experiences online, because you don't really feel the brand online like you would if you got a catalog or went into a store.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working on it, but cool. That is totally the wave of the future, online ordering. I mean, everybody wants to do it.
Now, do you have your own bakery facilities, or do you use, how do you do that?
Yeah, we have a manufacturing facility affixed to our headquarters. That's where we make everything in Chicago, on Elston and Webster.
And you have hired and trained your own chefs and so forth, your bakery chef?
You know what? No, yes, but they're not chocolatiers. If, you know, they're really just, it's not that level. It's more like, I just needed to show them kind of how to do things, and then take your top management and educate them and send them to schools in Germany and stuff like that, and they'll learn more about the science of chocolate. But I really want them to be like operational, like wizards. And because I come up with all the flavors and all that kind of stuff, I don't really need them to do that. I just need them to execute with perfection and detail. So we have a pretty big crew in there.
Mm-hmm.
But you train them. You train them.
Sure, it sounds terrific, and you know, I've been on your site, and everything looks so amazingly delicious that
thank you.
And I can't wait to sample it. You know what? I have one more question before we go to questions. Let's see, we have three more minutes. First of all, why don't you share where some of your locations are?
Sure. Well, our most recent is in Chicago, the 951 West Armitage. It's the Armitage in Sheffield, in Lincoln Park in Chicago. And then our one downtown in Chicago is at 520 North Michigan Avenue on the second floor, which is the Nordstrom's Mall. And then our New York store is in Soho. It's 132 Spring Street between Wooster and Green. It's just a great store. They have a long white marble bar in the window, and you can kind of sit and drink and eat chocolate, and it's really cool. And then our next one on Madison is 1100 Madison Avenue. It's at 83rd and Madison, which is going to be opening in July, and it's going to be this little gem jewel box of a store. It's so cute. It's right on the corner, lots of windows. And then our store in Las Vegas is in the Forum Shops, the new added-on development that Forum Shops did a couple years ago. And the entrance is right off the Las Vegas Boulevard, the Strip. And that's a really beautiful, beautiful store, too. And then we sell to the bars, to like Whole Foods and Wild Oats. Now Wild Oats just got bought by Whole Foods, so there'll be one at some point here. And then our ice creams are finally getting launched nationally, which is my favorite new product. We do really interesting flavors, the ice cream, pandan ice cream, and the Nog ice cream with the curry and coconut is amazing. And, oh, this wattle seed one, it's got these seeds from Australia that taste like kind of a cross between hazelnut, coffee, vanilla, and chocolate with macadamia nuts. And then we did the Red Fire, which is the ancho and chipotle chili with Salem cinnamon and dark chocolate. So good. So those are kind of all speckled throughout the country. And then the Neiman Marcus's and Bergdorf's of the world.
And so we have no excuse. We have all of us go. We have a place that we can get to try your product. Now, the most important question of all. I saw your photograph and you stay thin. How do you do that?
I am hardly thin. Oh, I mean, I'm pretty much just, because I have to eat. I mean, honestly, I must have at least 13 pieces of chocolate a day because I hopefully I don't eat the whole thing, but I have to try that many every single day to make sure it's up to spec or whatever, or, you know, because I work in the kitchens in the morning, but the product doesn't get totally enrobed and finished until the end of the day. So I need to taste everything before it's sent to any customers. So with the quality control being so rigid and me sort of being a little micromanagey about the taste.
I was just going to say, that might be a hard one to give up.
I guess
working out a lot, huh?
Yeah, you got to work out. You got to work out every day. You got to just work out every day. And I have been bad lately, so I've like put on like a little bit. But it's like you have to, because if not, it just adds right up. And then I try sometimes I don't eat, you know, I don't eat lunch sometimes because it's like I've eaten chocolate. So,
oh, that's really tough. You know, my heart is aching for you. But I think we're just about ready to go to questions. I have a couple more of myself, but I want to open it up because I'm sure there's quite a few. So please, if you're interested in speaking to Katrina and asking questions, please do so. Just hit *0 and you'll get queued in. So Tommy's our operator. And Tommy, why don't you let me know as soon as you have a question ready?
Okay. Our first question is from Jennifer. Jennifer, please state your question.
Hi, this is Jennifer. I'm wondering, Katrina, at what point did you decide to take on a partner, and what made you feel that you would need a partner?
Well, I started the business with a partner because this is a friend from high school. We were great friends, and wouldn't it be fun? She didn't have anything going on. Wouldn't it be fun if we worked together? Well, that is the worst decision to bring on a partner you've ever heard of. And so I think that I was probably insecure about my attributes, maybe just about doing it. So I thought, oh, let me, you know, maybe I'll have a partner and that'll make things better. Well, ultimately, it didn't, because we didn't have matched skill sets. And she wasn't an entrepreneur, so she was always nervous that she was going to lose her money, rightfully so. I mean, it's a growing business. And she was the one who had stocks. I didn't have anything. So she was able to use that as the collateral for the business. And she got to a point where she wasn't comfortable doing that anymore and wanted to start a family and, you know, do that thing. And so then that's when she exited and I bought her out. And you know, ever since that experience, I just didn't want to ever have a partner ever again. It didn't work for me. It doesn't work for me. So it may work for other people, just not me.
Okay.
Partnerships are tough. Thank you very much for that question, because that's a great one. Thank you. Tommy,
Yes. Our next question comes from Trudy. Trudy, please state your question.
Hi, my name's Trudy.
Hi, welcome.
I have a small natural skincare business that I've been running for about 5 years, and I feel like I've hit a wall as far as PR, obtaining liability insurance, everything basically. And I'm just wondering if you used a business coach, because it sounds like everything just fell into place for you.
Well, I had, like I said, mentors, like Larry from European Imports, he had a large import business in Chicago, and he was the one who sold me my chocolate. So he was always the guy that could get anything I wanted in. He would then inventory it. He was just down the road. So then I would, you know, I would have very little cash output because I could order every single day for cash flow. He sort of always advised me on, like, HR issues and things I should try. So I had him, who it was, mm-hmm. it was huge, you know, just, so I think if you could find someone locally in your community that becomes a mentor angel for you to just help you strategize and whatnot, I think that's really core, especially operationally.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I needed help. But from a marketing standpoint, if you feel like you're hitting a wall from a PR standpoint, I would just, you know, really look at your product and, like, what's the niche? And, like, are you organic? I mean, let's face it. It's an organic world. You've got to be in that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what differentiates you from the rest? Because it's a very competitive industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is there a face behind the product? Do you need to, you know, do you need to exploit that more? And, you know, have you talked to your local? I think that's such a great thing we kind of talked about here. Go to your local markets that have branches to a larger distribution channel, like your Whole Foods that are local. Like, is that a possibility? Could you start locally and do the sampling thing and promoting, you know, just locally? And then get the opportunity to have it in all the region, and then maybe go to another region because this region said, oh, it worked great for me and I'm already in there. So, you know, all that stuff, just start kind of stair-stepping it up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that help?
Can I ask a second question? Is that allowed?
Sure. I think we have some time.
I want to know, did you just go straight to storefront, or did you actually sell at little events and, you know, were you a vendor anywhere, or did you just go right to a storefront?
Kind of went pretty quickly to a storefront.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice if you could have a storefront / workspace, because
right.
then you have a physical spatial dimension. So if the press ever wanted to come, they could
mm-hmm.
experience the retail side, and then they could go in the back room and see you making it or packaging
right.
it or whatever. And I think that's a really, really important thing, just from my experience in
mm-hmm.
building a brand, to be able to have people interact with it physically.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Marnie. Marnie, please state your question.
Hi, this is Marnie, and Delia, this is a wonderfully different kind of interview that we're experiencing today, and I really appreciate it. Katrina, you just...
Thank you, Marnie.
You sound as if you know you're a young woman, and I know you've had some wonderful mentors, but I'm curious to know whether you are available or not through your email address if we think of questions after we've sorted through our notes and then go over the materials that are online, which I unfortunately Tommy was speaking when I was trying to write down your website, so I didn't get that.
Yeah, my website's just www.bogechocolates.com, so V as in Victor, O, S as in Sam, G as in golf, E, S as in Sam, and then the word chocolate, chocolate.com. And then, you know, it's probably easier to just set up like a phone thing because I get so many emails that I sometimes don't even get back to people for months because it's just, I'm kind of inundated. So maybe the best way to do, if you have any more questions, is go through my assistant and maybe she could set up some time that we could talk. And she's jessica@bogechocolate.com.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank
mm-hmm.
you. Thank you, Marnie. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Kim. Kim, please state your question.
Hi, Katrina. I was wondering, have you found the Woman Business Owner Certification to be a discernible benefit? And if so, how?
You know, not yet, but I know that it should be. I got it because I thought I would be able to get grants from it, federal grants, and I don't think there's a lot of money left in the federal grant department for loans, but it has been helpful because we are going to open a store in O'Hare Airport, and that's really instrumental in having that for that kind of thing, for municipal things. I think that it would probably be a feather in our cap because we just got it not but a few months ago to do a press release to Whole Foods and to companies that have supplier diversity programs within their departments. Like, I've been trying to meet with local banks who say that they have supplier diversity programs and whatnot. Nothing's really come out so much of that. But, you know, like, if you wanted to be in Macy's or Federated or whatever they're calling it now, they really like that, and they like to promote that from a marketing side. So it's definitely an angle, and it's just an added little cherry on top. I don't know how much it affects. It depends on your business, I guess.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I'm going to add something to that. You know, the certification, I think it's always very, very important to understand, you know, the real benefits of the certification. And like you said, you know, it opens doors for you on a corporate level where every company right now, a large corporation, has initiatives in how to, you know, how to increase their market share, including the government of women business owners. But it's very important if you're not using it, because I find myself in the same situation. You know, I think it's a good thing to call, you know, like WeBank, and find somebody there who could literally help direct you as to ways in which, and companies in which are, you know, demonstrating, you know, maybe more interest. Because I think we're all, if we don't have clear government strategies, I think there's definitely some challenges there.
Right.
Tommy, anybody else?
Yes. Our next question is coming from Jill. Jill, please state your question.
Hi, Katrina. This is Jill. First of all, congratulations on your success. Your story is very inspiring, and I'm so glad that you've shared it with us. But my question is, how did you approach real estate and determining not only the first city or the second city to open a store in, but also the exact location? Did you hire a real estate expert, or is it something that you just kind of figured out?
I am such an instinct person. I don't hire a lot of experts. I barely like to use lawyers. I'm just kind of go with a lot of instinct, and this is how I am. So, no, I just knew that I know our customer. So I know we have two types. We have this young, creative, hip, you know, Soho-going type of person, and then I know we have this maybe more luxury, maybe older, maybe more affluent customer as well that wants to buy, like, high-quality luxury experience. So Soho was just a natural, and also with foot traffic. At the end of the day, if you don't have the foot traffic, it's very difficult to do the business, except for in L.A., because a lot of business is done on the phone in L.A. People have a lot of cars, and there's not a lot of foot traffic, but a lot of that business is done with an entertainment business, and so they usually phone in orders. So that's the only sort of exception to the high foot traffic rule, I would say. You could also go the destination route, which is, you know, a little more – it's affordable, but it doesn't guarantee that you're going to get the walk and drive. We're impulse buy, too. You know, people walk by chocolate. Oh, I want a chocolate. Oh, I need it. Or I need to buy a gift. I didn't really hire anyone to do that. But, you know, if you have a good broker in the city, they're going to make suggestions. But I wouldn't say you need to do research depending on your size. But that's just me.
And did you do all the contract negotiations yourself in terms of locations and then with architects?
A little bit, but I would get a lawyer involved for that stuff. Like, you need a contractual lawyer. I mean, I didn't have one for my first lease, but for my second lease, I was actually dating a lawyer, so that worked out. And then for the third lease, I wasn't, so I had to get, like, a New York lawyer to do this one for New York. Yeah, and I've signed leases that aren't that great for me, but that's because people, these big malls, which are tough, terrible landlords, they tend to, they don't really care so much about a chocolate company. Like, they care about Gucci or Marc Jacobs, but so they're not going to really, like, for our Forum Shops lease, it kind of stunk. It wasn't a great lease, but I just believed that it was going to do well in that market, so I just did it, and I just took a little bit of a risk and be like, bad things aren't going to happen, so it's fine. But that's an entrepreneur, right?
And there you go. Positive thinking. There you go.
I know.
I like the dating a lawyer thing.
Hey, I know. I had so many, like, little useful people around me, whether it was a boyfriend or a friend, and it was just so nice because everybody wants to help someone trying to live their dream, and that's what's so great. And Americans love, like, the dream of you know, being an entrepreneur and starting from, you know, your house and building it up. And a lot of people want to be a part of that. And so it's amazing if you just kind of reach out to people how much you'll get in, you know, in response.
Well, thank you. That passion is obviously very inspirational. Any other question, Tommy?
Yes, our next question comes from Rachel. Rachel, please state your question.
Trina, I'm Rachel. My question is, I operate a service-oriented business. I offer concierge services and a special events services to clients. So my clients are more time-challenged rather than financially challenged. My question is, do you have any suggestions on effectively marketing to these individuals?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's, like, obviously some really big companies that we've been working with, actually, that, like, Circles and whatnot, that are, like, really big sort of concierge service-type customers. Now, I don't know how you go about marketing to those people unless they're, like, in a certain building. I don't know. I'm not very familiar with that service world. I mean, because for me, it's all, like, sort of product-based, so I can get, like, triple exposures with, you know, selling at Neiman's and then having a website presence and having a catalog and then having a store so they can interact with it and find us in so many different ways. I know a lot of people say, you know, Chamber of Commerce is an interesting way to go about networking with people. I mean, you know, joining certain organizations that have your client base within them, you know, like social organizations like we have here, like House of Blues Foundation Room, you know. And the House of Blues Foundation Room, usually the membership's quite high, and so you tend to meet a lot of people that have high net worth and could use something like that. But a lot of those probably social networking things are really the way to do it because it's so personal, you know, like concierge service. So you want to make sure you like the person who's doing the service for you.
Yes. Thank you.
Sounds like you have to do a lot of networking out there.
Yes. Thank you.
It's interesting. Katrina, I hear you saying you're out there a lot. And I have to tell you, I rarely go to an event that I don't walk away with, you know, at least three or four connections that can absolutely support my business. And I'm out in conferences because that's my business. I speak all the time. Right. But I will tell you that I am, you know, even if you got to push yourself, get out there.
Yeah.
Put yourself out there. Who you're talking to, you just don't know. When you're on a plane, start talking to somebody.
Right.
I mean, it's just like,
it's
put
true.
Yourself out there. You'd be surprised at how many people will come into your life that could support you.
Right.
Tommy, do we have any other questions?
Yes, we do. Our next question comes from Rose. Rose, please state your question.
Hi. Katrina, how do you avoid alienating your wholesale versus your online internet retail sales?
Well, we have directors for each one of those channels. So, you know, we have people in charge of the website. We have a director of wholesale. We have a VP of sales. We now have a director of retail stores. And the key is just having communication between all of them. You know, obviously it tends to be that the creative gets more involved with our catalog campaign and our website and then our store graphics. But the stores really had to kind of fight for that because we've been so internally focused on marketing and the stores are not in front of us every day. So just have to have, you know, increased communication and you have to have people focusing on the different areas. And you'll know when the time's right to add those positions because it's like too much for one person to do maybe retail and wholesale. And, you know, and so then you kind of look at you know, how much am I going to spend, but how much am I going to gain, you know, going to return on investment types of analysis on, okay, if I hire this person for X amount of dollars, but they're going to bring me this much in wholesale business, then that's when you know it's the right time to make that decision.
I'm actually asking that from a customer standpoint. For example, I have an online retail store considering moving into wholesale.
Yeah.
And I've heard in a similar business that wholesalers, the B2B side of it, say a B2B customer may not like the fact that I have an online retail store because it competes with them.
Oh, I don't worry about that, no. No. I mean, that's so crazy. We have, like, our address and website and everything on the back of the bars that are sold in all these retailers.
No, I wouldn't worry. You know, sometimes you hear stuff like that, and it's like shapes your whole decision-making, like that one person said that. Because I've had that happen too, where, and then I get it in my head like, oh, but then no one will want it if I have my own website. But it's not true. Just focus on building your brand, doing something so incredible with your with everything that you do, you know, everything that you touch, everything that you create. Make it amazing. And that is not going to be an issue.
Way to go with your success, Katrina.
Oh, thank you. I don't know if I'm successful yet, but you're sweet to think so. I've got to work on life balance, you know. I'm not super balanced yet.
That'll be our next class.
That's right.
How to eat chocolate, how to have your cake and eat it too.
I know, that's the truth.
From Ruja, right? Okay. Sounds fabulous. You know what? We're running out of time, but I think we have, do we have any other questions? I hate to leave anyone hanging.
Yes, we do.
All right. Can we do one more quickly?
Sure.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Melissa. Melissa, please state your question.
I just wanted to know what her plans were for the future.
I'm sorry, Tommy? We're getting some
it.
Background.
It was Rose's phone. I just muted her out. Sorry about that.
Okay. I just wanted to know what Katrina's plans were for the future for her brand.
You know, just keep evolving. I want to have... You know, probably I'll have maybe 9 stores in 3 years. I want to do some work in Japan and London, and I'd love to be able to do a hotel one day and a book, and you know, I just think just more things to engage in interesting experiences with chocolate through like interesting partnerships, and just keep exploring and just keep. You know, trying to do new things and open people's mind, but constantly changing. You know, you can't ever stay the same or you die. You know, you got to keep changing, got to keep moving forward. So I just kind of try to live. You know, I have a 3-year vision. My company knows about it. I've presented it to them. I've sent them the vision written, so they know where I'm at for the next 3 years. But that's not to say that there aren't going to be surprises and secrets that come out along the way, because that's what, you know, keeps it organic and real. So we'll see.
Sounds exciting. We're going to follow your journey. You know what? We're going to ask, I'm going to see, Tommy, how many more people did we have on the line?
We have 2 other people on the line.
Okay. You know what? Our call is only an hour. We want to respect everyone's time. I think what I'd like to do is to, if we can do this real fast, but it's your time as well, Katrina, can we go to, can we literally do 2 more minutes? Okay, then I'm going to just wrap it up. But one thing before we don't forget, everyone's going to get a survey. We really want to hear from you. Please do fill out that survey. Tell us about what you like, what you want us to do differently. Share with us ideas. We want to hear from you. Please share with your friends about this teleclass. As you know, Principal does this for you complimentary, so please let other business owners know about this fabulous resource. And don't forget our next class. Sign up for it. It's all about simple strategy to boost your profitability, and this is going to be phenomenal. And it's Tuesday, May 29th, so make sure that's on the on your calendar for sure. So again, thank you, Katrina. But let's take one more. You know, let's do this. If we could do this fast, we'd love to do that. Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Christia. Christia, please state your question.
Hi, Katrina. This is Christia. I just wanted to say once again, congratulations on your success. And I know that you touched briefly on balance and that your company has grown rather rapidly. So I was just wondering what kind of things do you do to maintain just a little bit of balance in your life?
I mean, I try to keep to one ritual for myself every single day. And whether that's as little as just having a moment and having some tea, or whether it's going to a yoga class, but like one thing where it's just like, you know, me alone, doing my thing, you know, sort of just something to kind of bring me into the center again and get me out of the worry and the email and the phone and the responsibilities and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's the key. And it takes a lot of discipline because, you know, people are always asking for things all the time. You know, can you please do this? Can you please do that? Can I just talk to you for 1 minute? Can I just have this? And it's like, you know, it's hard to put boundaries on things, but you really need to keep your well full. And so for me, I just need to really be disciplined to do one ritual for myself a day. And I'd love it to be horseback riding every day, but it's not at this point.
It's not at this point, but thank you so much for asking that question. Katrina, we have 60 seconds, so
okay.
Let's see if we can quickly take the last one.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Sue. Sue, please state your question.
Hi, Katrina. This is Sue Ellen. Congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
But obviously with success comes failure. Have you had any experience with failure in, you know, maybe your locations or any of the ventures that you've kind of branched out into? And how did you handle that? Share with us some of that experience.
Yeah, I've had a lot of failures. The first company I started, I was doing two at the same time, Vosges and this plate company. I was trying to do a line of plateware with resin, but I couldn't figure out how to work with the resins and get the molds made, so I lost about $15,000 on that. And then when I opened Las Vegas, I spent over double the amount I thought I was going to spend on doing the store. Instead of being like $200,000, it was $500,000. The store has been really weak. We've lost over $300,000. But we'll make it up in the 10-year lease. And it's just like, you know what? You learn from your mistakes. I'm never going to open in a new mall again unless the rent is really cheap. So, you know, you learn from your experience. But I encourage making mistakes because that's how you really, like, learn. Like, I tell my staff that, too. You don't want to make huge dollar mistakes. But it's okay, and you should be, you know, comfortable with that.
You learn and you grow.
Yeah.
Thank you for your question. That was a terrific way to end it because, you know what, at the end of the day, no matter what, you know what, you're always looking at the long-term opportunity vision and the
right.
passion behind it. Katrina, you've been an extraordinary guest. Thank you for being a part of our life today. And I want to wish all of you a wonderful, wonderful month and see you again next Teleclass Tuesday. Thank you. Bye-bye now.